I think working through Proverbs has been really interesting because, as we've discovered, it has a lot to say to all of us. There's a lot for children. We saw that in the first 10 chapters. Here, a father is speaking to his son. And so we had these fatherly talks. It has much to say to wives. We saw that from Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 4, which we used as a springboard to look at the role of women from the book of Proverbs, the role of wives. And there's something for husbands as well, which we saw last time. Now, when we come to chapter 13, I want to again use a verse here to open up another theme that relates to family life. I want this evening to speak to parents and what God's word has to say to parents about bringing up their children. Now, here in chapter 13, there's a lot of different types of wisdom. It speaks about speech in verse 3. It speaks to those who are lazy, the sluggard, in verse 4. It talks about hypocrisy when it comes to riches, verse 7. And then it goes on and on. And remember, we said in this part of the book of Proverbs, some of these proverbs can be quite random. And there's no connected theme at times, because Solomon is reflecting the randomness of life and how life can throw different things at us, and therefore we need different types of wisdom. But the verse I want to focus your attention on is verse 24, which is not very popular in society today, and actually will probably be abolished and outlawed. It's just a matter of time. This is what verse 24 says. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. It is saying that if you spare the rod, in other words, if you don't discipline your children, if you spoil them, you actually hate them. But if you really love them, you will discipline them promptly. Now, sadly, in our generation, this has either been abused, and the whole concept of discipline has become something that is brutal and cruel and harsh, or the other extreme is that it's been totally neglected by parents. Believe me, this is so important, and that's why this subject reoccurs again and again and again in the book of Proverbs. Let me show you this. Turn with me to Proverbs chapter 19, Proverbs 19 and verse 18. It says this: chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction. This is extremely important, especially for fathers. It's saying chasten, discipline, while there is hope, before his pattern of behavior becomes fixed. If not, you are actually destroying your child. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6, it says this: train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Discipline your child, train them up, and it'll stay with them for the rest of their lives. That which you have put into them, that which you have instilled into them, will never ever leave them. Chapter 22 and verse 15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. A child is foolish. A child doesn't understand. And they need discipline. Chapter 23, verse 13 and 14. Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with the rod and deliver his soul from hell. Chapter If you discipline your child, the child's not going to die. In fact, you'll save his soul. This is what it's saying here. Chapter 29 and verse 15, it says this: the rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Discipline your child, or he will bring shame upon you. If you don't discipline, you are creating a rod for your own back in the long run. Chapter 29 and verse 17 says this: correct your son and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. If you discipline, it's saying here, then it'll bring peace and delight to the home. So you can see here, there's a lot of verses that speak directly to parents and gives wisdom for bringing up their children. I grew up in a family of 8 children. Gita's family, they had 9 children. So she had 9 siblings. Our upbringing is very similar. Maybe that explains why we are the way we are. I don't know. Both our fathers took no real responsibility at home. They were always out drinking, getting into fights and trouble. We were petrified of our father. I remember it was like, you know, just walking on eggshells all the time, because my father was very wild and could be violent. So in both our cases, our fathers never really fulfilled their role. But amazingly, the Lord saved both of our fathers, and they changed and their lives became better, and they became good fathers. They were not perfect. They made mistakes still, but by God's grace, they changed. I remember when I first went to South Africa in 1992, Gita's father took me around to different places to show me around the area, the city of Durban. And a lot of people knew him. And they said, oh, your father-in-law, he was such a bad person. He had a terrible reputation. But then they said, your father-in-law changed. God changed him. And these were non-Christians as well, saw the change in him. Now, I'm telling you this to give you hope, that if you feel you're a bad parent, the gospel can change your life and make you into a better mother and a better father. So parents, what I want to do this evening is simply look at three areas. First of all, what I want to do is look at the 2 basic principles for bringing up children, not only from Proverbs, but other parts of the scriptures as well. And then I want to, thirdly, just practically point out how we can do this and in a practical way, what it looks like practically. So firstly, parents are to love their children. This is the first principle. This is the first instruction. This is so important. A child needs to know that my mom and my dad, they love me. You may not be a perfect mother, you may not be a perfect father, but can your child say, perfect, but I know they love me. I know they make mistakes, but their desire is for good. Children should feel the warmth of that love and should be comforted by it and in it. For mothers, what does it say? Titus chapter 2 and verse 4. Titus 2 and verse 4. It says this: that they admonish the young women. So the older women are to admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. What does it say here? Children first? No, husbands first, then children. That way you'll have a healthy family. So it says here, mothers are to, in verse 11, Paul speaking to the Thessalonians says, I comforted and charged you, father does his own children. Paul is saying to the Thessalonians, I came to you and I loved you and I comforted you and I instructed you as a father does his children. Ephesians 6 and verse 4, it says this, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. And turn to Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21, it says, exhorter, fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. It means, fathers, do not make your children unnecessarily angry. It's important that we do love them, so we don't provoke them to wrath. It talks about prayer. And Jesus is speaking here, and he says, which father will give his son a stone if he asks for bread? Or a serpent if he asks for a fish? Or a scorpion if he asks for an egg? He says, you being evil know how to give good things to your children. How much more God? He's saying, you being evil as a parent can still express love to your children. So both mothers and fathers are to love their children. There was a judge in a young offender's court, and he made a comment. He said, of the thousands of cases I've presided over, I have yet a child come before my court who had parents who loved him, a father who took care of him, who took him fishing, and spent time with him. Now you'll find that this statement is generally true. I say generally because sometimes you could be a good parent and still your children can go astray. But I think generally speaking, it is true. If parents demonstrate practical love towards their children by creating time for them, then they will reap the rewards one day when their children grow up. The problem, it seems to me, is that some parents these days are so busy that their children are like orphans, especially when it comes to fathers. I think generally speaking, fatherhood has improved. Maybe sometimes it's gone too far the other way. Mothers have become the breadwinners and fathers have become house husbands. And I really don't think this is the right order. But fathers tend to be more engaged these days than a generation ago. But to go against God's order and is not biblical, where fathers become mothers and mothers become fathers, roles are reversed. And if that's the way you operate, you'll find in the long run, it'll affect you. And there'll be implications for your family and for your children. But sometimes fathers can be so busy with hobbies and work and friends and television, and they hardly spend time with their children. And before you know it, the kids have grown up and it's too late. No, children need to feel loved. Spend time with your children. Play with your children. Care for your children. Hug your children. Kiss your children. Have fun with your children. Interact with your children. Your spouse comes first, but then your children, then your careers. I have a friend who lived in East London. Whenever I go preaching in London or that part of London, I usually stop with him and his family. And he has three children. Every year he will treat them and take them away for a couple of days, not together, but individually, one by one, so that he could connect with his daughters, the two daughters and his son, and really spend time with them and get to know them. And I've heard his teenage son say, "My dad is the best dad in the world." Another pastor friend every evening has a family time, and so he will, from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, he will not answer his phone, so that he could give time in a busy day to his children, especially when they are young. So love is absolutely essential. But secondly, parents need to discipline their children. Need to discipline their children. Now, this is what most of the proverbs we've read are saying. Why? Because although children are lovable, they are also sinners, and they need correcting. In fact, if you go back to Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24, it's saying that if you don't discipline your children, you actually hate them. That's not real love. If your child is sitting in the house and goes towards an open fire and is about to put his hand in the fire, do you say, "Oh, it's okay, it doesn't matter"? No, you get up, you stop the child, and you discipline them. That's love. And you say to them, "Next time, do not go near the fire." And you need to explain why, because it'll harm the child. Now, if we do it in some areas, discipline in some areas, why don't we correct them in other areas? That's love, isn't it? Discipline is essential, but be careful. Discipline should never be first in the parent's mind. Now, the first thing is always love. And discipline is always the last thing that is imposed when it's absolutely necessary. If the child is doing nothing wrong, you don't need to keep unnecessarily telling them off all the time. Some parents can be over strict. Some parents can be brutal towards their children. And all they talk about is discipline, 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 discipline. And they never ever show love towards their children. Love is always first. Discipline only comes in when it's necessary. And parents need to be careful here. Even when they discipline, they must never do it out of revenge, or because they are irritated or angry, or it's done to satisfy their ego, or they take their temper out on their children. No, parents need to discipline as God disciplines us. And we need to learn from our Father in heaven. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6, "For whom the Lord loves, he chastens." So you see there, it should be done out of love, because our Heavenly Father does it out of love. And what's God's motive? Hebrews chapter 12, verse 10 to 11. It tells us there that we may be partakers of his holiness, and that we may yield fruit. A parent's motive in disciplining is to train the child, to improve their character, and teach them what is wrong and what is right. Otherwise, they will never know the difference. If we do not discipline, children will not learn to respect people, to respect things. They'll be spoiled, and therefore they will not be good, respectable citizens. They will learn to answer back to mom and dad, and if they answer back to mom and dad, they'll answer back to their teachers in school. Then they'll start their work life. They're going to society. And they will have a chip on their shoulder and feel the world owes them something. So discipline is absolutely essential. But you say, how should I discipline? What should I do? What does it look like practically? So we've seen love is important, firstly. Secondly, we've seen the importance of discipline. But thirdly, how should we discipline? Now, let me give you some general principles. It doesn't cover everything, but it's just a generalization. Firstly, when your children are in their formative years, so years 1 to 8, these years are absolutely crucial. Here, a child can be manipulated. You can shape the child. You can teach them. God has made the brain to learn things more quickly in these years. Teach them sleep patterns, to be in bed by a certain time. Get a routine going. When I visit English homes, the kids are in bed by 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, and they're very disciplined. When I go to Asian homes, maybe at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, kids are awake, and they say, oh, the kids go to sleep when we go to sleep. That's not good. Sometimes children don't sleep until 10 or 11 o'clock. And then the next day, they are tired when they go to school. Discipline is really, really important. Establishing patterns of resting and waking and so on, it's really important. But don't be so regimented like soldiers. Have some flexibility. If it's holiday time, let them go to bed a little later. If it's a Sunday, it's the Lord's day. So it doesn't matter. You can break your routine. It's important that they realize that it's we need to come to church in the morning. Maybe they can have a nap if they're young in the afternoon, then come to church in the evening. It's the Lord's day. Don't be dictated by middle-class upbringing. Middle-class upbringing is geared up to do just one thing, and that is to educate children and to make sure that they become independent and have good careers. Now, again, there's nothing wrong with that, but that should never be the priority for a Christian. The Christian's priority should always be the Lord, to bring up the child in the training of the Lord. That is more important than your child's career. It's more important than anything else. Often I find parents will spend so much money on their children's education. They'll make sure that they get the best they're in the best areas. They'll sometimes even move home to make sure they're in the right catchment area for the best schools. And there is after-school tuition as well, tuition on a Saturday. But then Sunday school for an hour, and that's it. That's all there is. There's nothing else. And they won't even spend time with their children at home in prayer and reading the Bible. We've become very middle class. The emphasis is very much on careers. A Christian parent's emphasis should be completely different. Yes, careers are important. Yes, education is important. But nothing is more important than bringing this child up so that one day they come to know the Lord. So don't be so regimented. Bring your children to church Sunday morning. Bring them in the evening. Some couples in our church, at Lum Prayer, used to bring their daughter, Krisha, to the prayer meeting on a Wednesday. Shimpli as well, Shingada, the same, and all of their children, those who have come to the age of accountability, all of them are now in the Lord, and they've served the Lord faithfully a lot. The way your children grow go sometimes depends a lot on the parents. I find parents who are really zealous and committed to the Lord, you find that the children are the same. And those who are not committed to the Lord, you find that the children are the same as well. So these are in crucial years, the formative years. You can mold your children. They're like clay. You can manipulate the clay and shape it the way you want. But once the clay sets, that's it, it's too late. Now, once the children become teenagers, then if you haven't put the hard work in the formative years, it's probably too late. It's always harder later. If your child defies you, your authority, and they become stiff-necked and rebellious, you need to discipline them. Warn them once. Next time, twice, if they carry on, warn them twice, raise your voice. And then last time, third time, raise your voice and warn them. And after that, there's no discussion. You must not let your child have their way. Don't pamper them. Don't spoil them. Grandparents, if parents need to discipline their children, don't say, oh, leave him, it's okay, leave her, they're only a child. Let the parents discipline. The child needs to know who's in charge. If they don't listen, then only as a last resort, you may need to spank them. Not on the head, because obviously they'll lose their brain cells. On the legs or arms or the bottom. It must be in love to correct, not to satisfy your anger. It mustn't be too harsh. It must never be brutal or abusive. It mustn't leave a mark on the child, otherwise social services will be on your back. But as Christians, you know, we need to fight to keep banking in society as a way of disciplining. The reason for this is because the world tries to abolish this banking is because the world's worldview is completely different to our worldview. The world believes that a child is born perfect and learns to do wrong. The Bible teaches that they do wrong because they are sinners. You don't need to teach a child to sulk, do you? They just instinctively know to sulk. When you have two children and they have a fight and you break up the fight and you say, whose fault was it? You never hear a child saying it was my fault. They'll always say it's his fault or her fault, even if they were at fault. Children are sinners. And so discipline is essential. And we need to teach them right from wrong. Never insult your child when you discipline them. Never call them names. If necessary, get your child to apologize. The child may argue with you, fight with you, resist you, but you must insist. So it's important that we discipline. And you may not need to ever smack your child. Sometimes just verbalizing may be successful. But as a last resort, you may need to spank to correct them. As a child grows up and becomes a teenager, now, these are the hardest years of a parent's life. Try to befriend your children in these years. Talk to them. Be open with them. They go through issues. Go through the book of Proverbs with them. Discipline may be necessary. If they misbehave, it may not be appropriate to hit them, depending on the culture. And also, they may even be bigger than you and stronger than you. But discipline is still important, and you may need to impose discipline by depriving them of certain privileges. Ground them, or they can't use the computer or the mobile or the television for a week or so. Treat them as young adults as they grow up. Give them responsibilities and freedom, but give them boundaries as well, which they must not go beyond. But in these years, don't let go of them spiritually. Insist that they come to church. I find that if children start having their way in these years as teenagers, and they say, oh, I don't want to go to church, and they drift and they don't come to church, and the parents just say, it's okay, you'll lose them. That's my experience. You'll lose them. But if you insist in these years, when they're teenagers, you are coming to church, whether you like it or not. This is what we do as a family. You're under my roof. You're under my responsibility. You are coming. They may kick up a fuss. They may argue with you, but slowly, 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 they will settle and they'll get used to it and they'll start listening, and eventually they may even come through to the Lord. But you must insist that they come to church. But as they go on and mature and become adults, parents, you need to let go of your children and guide them and help them to make the right choices in life. Let them grow up, but always be there for them. When they are young, there are things you must insist on, and you don't give them a choice. You don't give them a choice in whether they can come to church or not. You must insist they come, and reading the Bible and praying and so on. But when they're in their 20s, maybe you need to ease off, because they need to be accountable to God themselves. You cannot force them forever. They must choose God for themselves. And certainly when they get married, please, please let go of them. Don't say, you have to stay with me. Look at all that I've done for you. You haven't done it for them. You have done it for the Lord. Let them get on with their own lives. Let them get their own place. Let them function. Don't interfere in their marriages and constantly dictate to them, but always be there for them. Parents, be wise. Learn to love your children, but also learn to discipline them.